A lot of people say, well, why would I belong to the City Club? And what we always say, well, if you want to hear it first in the City Club, or you want to hear it first, come to the City Club. So, April 6, 2016, many of the people here today were here then. And Paul Green, God rest his soul, was up here. It was just short of 3 years ago, 34 months ago yesterday. You're going to see something here. 1,037 days ago, 24,888 hours ago, at 12:28 p.m., our chairman, Paul Green, introduced Fran Spielman. And now it takes 55 seconds, so please watch this, and you will know why we say you heard it first here at the City Club of Chicago. Roll.
I think that I don't think you will see Mayor Rahm Emanuel's name on the ballot again in Chicago. I think if he had been, I'm just saying that I frankly don't think that he had intended to run more than two terms anyway. Now the decision, I think, it will be made for him.
So, without further ado, I'm going to have her acknowledged in a minute, but let's give Fran Spielman a round of applause for that prescient wisdom, Fran. At that time, also, we're honored to have with us today the publisher, who was the publisher of that at that time of the Sun-Times, Edwin Eisendrath. Edwin, say wave to everybody. Okay, board member Frank Paul. Frank, you're on.
All right. It's my privilege to get us started today by introducing Brandis Friedman, and she will introduce the rest of her panel. I'm sure that most all of us have seen Brandis on Channel 11, where she has been a correspondent and the anchor for Chicago Tonight. Her reporting on education and criminal justice issues has appeared on PBS NewsHour and NPR's The Takeaway. Before she came to Chicago Tonight, Brandis worked as a reporter and anchor for WBBM News Radio 780 and as a producer and reporter for WGLA ABC 7 in Washington, D.C., where she earned three regional Emmy Awards for her work. She's earned a Peter Lisagor Award, recognizing excellence in journalism from the Chicago Headline Club. She is currently on the board of the Chicago Headline Club, which is the local chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. She's a graduate of Dillard University in New Orleans, where she earned a degree in mass communication, and she earned a master's degree in journalism from Columbia University. Brandis, the stage is yours.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to introduce our panelists very briefly. I feel like you guys, they probably don't need much introduction. I'm going to start with Bill Ruthart because I'm sitting at the same table with him. Bill, would you please join us? As well as Fran Spielman. And where did Greg Hines go? There he is. Hi, Greg. Thank you. And I'm gonna actually, while Greg is joining us, my first question is actually going to be straight to Fran, because we just watched that clip where she made that prediction several years ago. And Fran, I just want to know, what made you make that prediction at the time? How did you know?
I had a gut feeling that the Laquan McDonald, the handling of the tape, and all the fallout from it would push Rahm Emanuel over the edge. coupled with the $1 billion in taxation needed to handle the pension crisis. It was a huge mountain for him to climb, and I just felt that going in, I think he had it in his mind to do two terms and out, and I think when the Laquan McDonald situation happened and the fallout from it, I think it was a decision made for him.
So what's your crystal ball tell you?
Sorry?
What does your crystal ball tell you?
Now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, this is the most unpredictable mayoral election I've ever covered, literally. I mean, I started in 1977 covering Dennis Block. Does anyone in this room remember him? Okay. Okay. And I covered the Jane Byrne 79 victory over Blandick, which was about a lot more than the snow, even though people like to talk about it only being the snow. I covered the historic election of Harold Washington and the fight between Sawyer and Evans in 89 that paved the way for Rich Daley. I remember I was pregnant then, and I was in a very crowded room on the floor, and I knew it was time to go on maternity leave when I couldn't get up. I've seen so much, and yet this election has defied all logic. First of all, people thought Rahm was going to run. I didn't, but most people did, and he did not. Then we thought that police reform was going to dominate everything, and it did not. We have the biggest corruption scandal probably we're going to see ever, possibly toppling the entire power structure in Illinois and Chicago, because it's the big guys. It's Burke, and it's the people. It's not the two-bit alderman who gets an envelope in the parking lot. It's the people who run the zoning committee and the finance committee and those people. And then we thought that maybe when Toni Preckwinkle came in that she was going to run away with it, it would be a coronation for her. And in fact, she struggled mightily because who knew she was going to get dragged into the scandal herself by the $10,000 contribution that Burke allegedly muscled for her from the Burger King franchise owner. So many things. We thought the field would be winnowed by the ballot challenges, and here we are at 14. We thought so many things. We thought maybe that the city didn't have an appetite for yet another Mayor Daley. And yet Bill Daley is running a disciplined, well-financed campaign. He's managed to stay above the fray, and he's right in there on TV and possibly getting a spot in the runoff. So a ton of things that we thought were going to happen have not happened, and it's really an election that can go any which way.
Bill, Greg, do you want to size up your take on the election for us?
I have two thoughts. One is there are so many really important things at stake. I mean, this is a pivotal moment for Chicago in any number of ways. From my perspective, the key issue, and maybe I'm saying this because I work for a business publication, needs to be how we spread the wealth in Chicago without killing the golden goose. If you all look at Chicago's economy, part of it, the central part of the city, is doing phenomenally well, despite all the headwinds from a broke state and pension problems or whatever. We're attracting headquarters, we're attracting good jobs, but that wealth hasn't managed to find its way out to the neighborhoods, at least not in an adequate amount. And the question is, how do we spread it without killing it? And for those of you who don't think you could kill it, there was a proposal just today from a group allied with the Chicago Teachers Union to impose a city income tax. If you and your wife together pulling at least or your husband pulling $100,000 or more, if you have a household income above it, guess what? From there on, 3.5% would go right to City Hall. And what would it pay for? Not the pensions, because they want to keep the pension, pay for free CTA, free community college. All those are nice things, but like I said, you don't want to kill the golden goose in the process. I can't think of anything that would drive this city's growing high-end service sector into the ditch than a municipal income tax. This is on top of the progressive income tax that J.B. Pritzker reasonably wants to pass in Springfield. So that's what should be on the table. But Fran is absolutely right. The field of candidates is so enormous that it's very hard for anybody to break through. And the corruption scandal, which broke after everybody filed, has really badly wounded the front runners. You know, 2 months ago, just before the Ed Burke raids, there was starting to be a little bit of a consensus that the people to watch were Tony Preckwinkle and Susana Mendoza, with maybe Bill Daley on the side. But this scandal has really hurt them all, because particularly Preckwinkle and Mendoza, to a lesser degree, Daley. That provides an opportunity for some of the second-tier candidates, Paul Vallis, Lori Lightfoot, Amara Enya. None of them has been able to quite put it together yet. Ergo, you've got a race that's so close that there was a poll the other day that showed the leader was 12%. When you have somebody leading with 12%, any little ripple out there that we're not noticing could make a difference. The newspaper endorsements could make a difference this time. If the newspapers both were to, the major newspapers were both to endorse the same candidate, that could mean 5%. That could be enough to put that person in the runoff. So, you know, take your pick, folks. I can give you a conceivable reason why any of at least a half a dozen people could make it in another runoff. Can't forecast it.
Bill?
Yeah, I think you know, who's going to make the runoff is about as clear as the skies outside today. I mean, it really is anybody's game. The irony, though, is with this federal corruption investigation going on at City Hall, you don't want to be tied to the establishment, yet the four candidates most tied to the establishment still kind of have the leg up. These other outsiders, these other 10 candidates just haven't had the resources, and if there were just one or two of them, maybe they could cut through the noise, but because there's 10 of them, it's been a difficult proposition. I think Gary Chico is someone that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. He's closely tied to Ed Burke, yet he just hasn't had the mud splash on his shoes like Preckwinkle and Mendoza, and he's been on TV differentiating himself from the other three establishment candidates. And so I think, you know, he quietly could kind of be creating a lane for himself here. Amara Enya is a great unknown, and just last night at a forum that Greg moderated quite well, I will say, there were a number of candidates who were asked, you know, if you had to vote for somebody on the stage, who would you vote for? And she was the most popular pick. Question there is, do young voters actually turn out? We had a good youth turnout in the midterms. That doesn't necessarily transfer to a February election in Chicago. And so, you know, I wouldn't want to be an incumbent alderman in this atmosphere for sure. And I think one dynamic, while we're all very focused on the mayor's race that folks aren't talking as much about, is just how much of a shift we're going to see on the city council. And it could be a dramatic shift to the left. And even if you do get one of these four establishment candidates as your next mayor, they're going to have a pretty difficult dynamic with a very new city council, potentially.
Yeah, you have to remember that the new mayor is not only going to face this huge spike in pension payments, $270 million in the very first budget, plus about $1 billion over 4 years. The person also has to preside over remapping at a time of a black exodus from Chicago, a population loss. You will have your hands full with this new city council, with any city council, but with a more progressive, independent city council, no matter who the mayor is going to have a real problem.
And Fran, you mentioned the issues. Obviously, the mayor, the alderman, whoever these people are going to have some serious issues to contend with. But what are voters taking? Like, what issues are they taking into the booth with them? Are they thinking about pensions and taxes and education and like, what are their issues?
I think the polling shows that the corruption scandal is not as important as it is to us in the media. I think maybe the issue is taxation, education. I mean, maybe Joe Moore knows a little bit more about this than me, but I think the meat and potatoes, everyday stuff, the things that impact people's lives, are more important than the corruption, which I think there's a real cynicism among the public that what difference does it make who we elect? They're all going to go that same road. And it's a shame that people feel that way. But look at the parade of aldermen who've gone to prison over the years. We have 30-some-odd people, and we have four more other under investigation now, and probably a lot more than we know. And now we have a guy who wore a wire because they had him. And then we have Burke, who's been charged with attempted extortion. I mean, and other people that are under investigation. So there's a real cynicism about corruption. What does it mean? Well, everybody's corrupt, aren't they? And so the meat and potato stuff is the thing that matters most. And I think taxes, schools, crime, those are the things that matter most to people.
You know, I would agree with that, that we in the media particularly get off on this corruption stuff. But I wouldn't discount it as a factor. Yeah, people are very worried about taxes. Crime is still out there. Our inability so far to come up with a system in which police are held accountable, but yet the police are free to do their job. They have to have both to really cut down on things. But I think this is having a particular impact in some of the aldermanic races. I've covered a lot, and some of you may have read some of the stuff I've written about the race in the 44th Ward. We have a longtime incumbent who's under a loud attack from the Ricketts family, who own the Cubs. I received, I think, six flyers just yesterday from either the leading candidate, a guy named Austin Bates, or from a group allied with the Alamo Manufacturers Association, which has been attacking him. And you would think normally that would be the dominant issue, but right now they're trying to hang Ed Burke around Tom Tunney's neck. They're saying, oh, he didn't vote to take away, he voted against empowering the inspector general. He didn't vote to take away control of workers' compensation from Burke. And the opposition is now trying to make Ed Burke the issue, not the connections to the Ricketts family or Tunney's overall record. And to one degree or another, that's playing out in every race in the city of Chicago. The answer is we're going to find out on election day what people are really most concerned about.
So yeah, I mean, I would agree with Fran in the sense that people care about the kitchen table issues, so to speak, and that shows up in the polling. I do think, however, when it comes to choosing which of these candidates they trust to address those issues, that's where the corruption scandal comes in. If they're already worried about Tony Preckwinkle, about the pop tax and raising the sales tax of the county, and now this, it might be the last shoe to drop for them to say, I'm going to look at somebody else this time. And I think same with Mendoza. You have a candidate who is trying to position herself as the candidate of the next generation, someone who's new, yet she's tied to the old by these scandals. So I think while the issues are important to folks, as they size up who they trust or who they think is best positioned to, you know, reform the schools or do new forms of taxation, that's where I think that plays in.
Let me add one thing to that. There's some potential here for people to seize on some of this stuff at the mayoral level and to go to town with it. But the candidates, frankly, have not handled as well as they should. Anya, for instance, is presenting herself as the voice of the new, young, up-and-coming, clean generation. We don't have anything to do with the stinky old city hall and all those corrupt politicians. Who'd she get an endorsement from last week? Dorothy Brown. Yeah. Now, you know, if you want to have somebody who does not represent young voices in clean government right now, I'm sorry, Ms. Brown, it's Dorothy. Bill Daley, despite his, you know, who there's some sentiment out there that amidst all this scandal, some people are going to vote for a voice of stability, and at least you kind of know where the Dailies are. The cities didn't fall apart when the Dailies were in charge, but he carries baggage. I mean, the Tribune whacked him pretty good today on an old issue, but one that's going to resonate with some people, and he's yet to kind of figure out how to embrace his family destiny without being a repeat of his brother.
Yeah, I had him on my show early on, and I asked him, well, you say you're not your brother's keeper, and that's fine. You say you'll be different, and that's fine. But what about what he did do you disagree with? He had written an op-ed in the Trib defending the parking meter deal. But then he said on my show that he would not have done the parking meter deal, and he would have ripped up Migs Field, yes, but in the broad daylight, not in the middle of the night. So, and it was like pulling teeth out of his mouth to get him to say that, because there's the family loyalty Of course, the dailies close ranks. We all know this. But if he wants to convince people that he really is not his brother's keeper, and of course he's not, and that there would not be a repeat of the hired truck and city hiring and minority contracting scandals and the pension deals to the nephews and the son and the financial neglect that left a real time bomb on Rahm Emanuel's lap, then he must articulate to the public how he is different, where was he when these decisions were made, because he made a lot of the decisions in the room with Rich Daley. He was in the room where it happened, as they say in Hamilton, on so many of these political decisions. And so he shouldn't be short-tempered about that question. And yet this last week, when we had them at the Sun-Times editorial board, I asked the question, which I thought was rather delicate, to get them to mix it up. The question was, Bill, why do you think a third Mayor Daley would be good for the city of Chicago, and why did the rest of you think otherwise? And he was furious about that question and said, I'm sick and tired of having six people who voted for my brother six times. They're not all idiots. Well, okay, but I think he needs to calm down and answer the question thoughtfully and answer it 1,000 times if he has to convince people that he is not going to be a repeat of what we've seen.
Yeah, particularly if he makes the runoff. That's going to be a central issue. I mean, usually running on the platform of Back to the Future won't get you very far in politics, and that's kind of what he's doing in a way. And he needs to figure out the formula, and he hasn't yet.
There was also this kind of, I thought, amusing moment last night where he referred to his father and brother, the mayors of combined 43 years, as career politicians and how he didn't take that path. I mean, career politicians is usually the negative ad moniker, right, that you attack someone with. And here he is referring to his own family in an attempt to distance himself. So it's an interesting box he's in, for sure.
Yeah, the funny thing was that he, a couple of months before Rahm Emanuel dropped out, called me furious about Rahm Emanuel blaming his brother for the mountain of taxes and said it was time for Rahm to put on his big boy pants and take responsibility. So there is this sensitivity that the Dailies have to any kind of criticism, and yet he has got to stand there and take it 1,000 times and really articulate to people how different he's going to be. It's not enough to just propose sensationally that you're going to reduce the size of the city council from 50 to 15. Because you know who used to propose that a million times? Ed Burke. Ed Burke proposed 1,000 times cutting the city council in half. What good would that do? I'm not sure it would do any good. You need so much more than that. So I think Daley, you know, he's
have fewer crew crooks, but they get more reach.
Yeah, and he's also proposed don't allow family members to do business with the city or anything else. Well, okay, that's fine, except that your nephew's made a fortune. So many people in the Daley family already have made their fortunes. Stop us before we do this again. The horse is already out of the barn. So he's got to explain more clearly, I think, and more patiently how and why he will be different.
You guys are making my job super easy. I just want you to know that. I'm enjoying the discussion. Greg, you mentioned it earlier about the number of candidates that are running for mayor. Is that good for voters? Is it good for democracy? Can the vote not become splintered when you've got 14 options to split 100% among?
The short answer is I think it's bad for democracy. I mean, you know, in theory, it's wonderful that anybody from any walk of life can walk up and run for mayor of the city of Chicago. There's an argument that it's too hard to run as it is. You have to get 12,500 unique good signatures, and that's really tough, and it limits it from little people. But you know, but the truth is, and I really don't mean this to come across as elitist, is voters can't really decide, and they can't be really educated when there's this many people running. Bill referred to this forum we gave last night. First, we had to decide how many people to invite. We ended up decided with 9 of the 14, the 9 we thought had any reasonable chance to be elected. But, you know, trying to drill down on any issue when you've got 9 people there, it's almost impossible. But yet, There's no way we can do, here's these two people, and then we'll have another forum with these two people, because nobody's going to go to 14 forums where they can see two candidates each. So, yeah, it becomes antithetical to good democracy. I mean, we may end up flipping our municipal coin in the air and get two people. Then we'll get a real campaign for the runoff.
At least we have a runoff.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, and while we're on it, who's likely to make it into the runoff? Like, we've talked about, you know, like the top four contenders or the Burke Four, sometimes they've been called as well. Can one of these, one of the not top four, like a Vallis or a McCarthy or a Lightfoot, Enya, can one of those folks make it into the runoff against a Tony Preckwinkle, a Susana Mendoza?
They could, but I think right now, with Preckwinkle's support from the unions, from SEIU, from CTU, from the foot soldiers that she has, even though there is residual anger about the pop tax, and you see polling in the black wards that shows that Willie Wilson in some wards is out-polling her, that's the residual anger from the pop tax. But you have to believe that with her money and with her foot soldiers, even though she has stumbled out of the gate on several fronts with the security chief, with her chief of staff and the firing, with the 10,000 and the explanation of that, and with the hiring of Burke's son, all of that, you have to still believe that she has enough to get to the runoff. So if I had to predict right now, and someone put a gun to my head and said, you must pick two horses, I would say Preckwinkle and probably Bill Daley, because he has so much money, and then the two of them will really face off. And then we will see a debate on the issues, and maybe three of them or four of them, and then we'll really hear the airing of the issues.
I can't go that far. Franny may be right. She may not be right. What if both of the papers were endorsed Laurie Lightfoot? Hello. Tell me what other headlines are going to come out in the next 2 weeks. I mean, there's lots of rumors about more to come here and more to come there. Maybe Mr. Fusco would like to lift the veil a little bit. I didn't think so.
We can just bring the affidavit up here and we can just read it.
We can all go through it. We've got four reporters.
So, no, I don't think, like, I'll go back to what I said before. When the leaders, according to the polls, is somebody with 12%, anything could flip it.
I do think there's been missed opportunities from this group of other 10 candidates. You know, Burke's offices got raided in November, and just yesterday we saw the first ad to hit the four front runners
right
on Burke by Lori Lightfoot. I mean,
a cable
December,
ad.
January. It took 3 months to do that. I mean, just total missed opportunity. Where Paul Vallis is on that and some of these other candidates is beyond me. Even if you were just going to run it on social media, it was a huge missed opportunity. So I do think, you know, there's been some. There's an opening, perhaps, if one of them had some money and could get some traction, but it just hasn't happened so far.
I'm going to go to an audience question. I mean, I've got a list, but I also have a stack of audience questions, and I'd like to get those in. This one is from Rachel Lawrence. Which of the mayoral candidates is more likely to work with President Trump in a spirit of professional and respectful cooperation?
I thought it was a good question.
I guess.
Well, I will say, I'll take this in one direction. There is a piece of federal legislation that some of the candidates have talked about that was actually in the Republican tax bill, and that's these opportunity zones. Basically, they're designed to draw private investment to struggling areas, and those investors get tax breaks. I think you'll see, you've heard Paul Vallis, Lori Lightfoot, Bill Daley, a number of folks talk about those. So if they wanted to pick one area where they could say something nice about President Trump and try to get some money tied to a piece of federal legislation, that would be it. I think, you know, Chicago, if there's any kind of infrastructure bill, which we've been saying for almost a decade now, is there going to be an infrastructure bill? That would be another area where you know, you'd be careless as mayor not to get out to Washington and do what you can to bring some of that money here. But politically, you're going to hear more of the same in defending Chicago sanctuary status and on and on.
For whatever it's worth, if you buy the opinion of the Young Republican Organization of Chicago, they back, of all people, Willie Wilson. Closest to the Republican ideal.
Whatever that means, though. I mean, who do they control with that endorsement?
Well, Wilson said he voted for Trump. That's what that is.
Yeah.
He's the only one.
And he's against taxes, which they like. He's of all the candidates in the field, he's the one who seems to be the most, I'm not going to raise any tax.
But it's hard to take seriously a party that doesn't even field a mayoral candidate and hasn't for years.
For Mark, whose last name I cannot pronounce, that's the answer to your question, which was, what do you think of several Chicago Republicans? I'm sorry?
Wiremiller.
Wiremiller. Thank you, Mark Wiremiller. Does that answer your question, getting their take on Republican groups supporting Willie Wilson?
Can I add something to that?
Please do.
One of the reasons we don't have a Republican organization of any consequence in this city or state anymore is because the Republicans kind of got lazy and they decided to let the big rich guy, Bruce Rauner, run everything and provide all the money and the candidates and all the direction and the policies or whatever. And Rauner lost and picked up his marbles and went home and there's nothing left. Now, you Democrats out there may say, great, but you're headed down the same road. The governor of Illinois now is a rich guy named J.B. Pritzker. If there's ever a fight between him and Mike Madigan, there's probably going to be some jostling down the road. There's a new dynamic because all those lawmakers now have another source to go to for money besides Mr. Madigan. They can go to Mr. Pritzker. So, you know, this tendency in American government, and Trump is the same, where rich guys who get control of the party organization and set the tone take over, has a downside because when the rich guys go, there's not much left.
I mean, to get to the root of the issue, though, I mean, there are a number of Republican voters in the city, particularly on the Northwest and Southwest sides, and they're not voting for Willie Wilson, right, mostly. So who's playing for that vote? It's Paul Vallis, it's Gary McCarthy, it's Jerry Joyce on the Southwest side, maybe a little Bob Fioretti. And I think Paul Vallis is making a major play for quietly for police officers in the city, firefighters. Everywhere he goes, he has the Police Memorial Fund lapel pin on his jacket. McCarthy really is not popular among the rank-and-file police officers. He's had some disparaging remarks about the FOP, which aligns itself awfully close with Trump. And so, you know, these Republicans are, while not a large chunk of the electorate, they certainly make a difference when you have 14 candidates. And I think you see a quiet effort to appeal to those voters without alienating, you know, more of your mainstream Democrats in the city.
And another fascinating dynamic is the Joyce family and the Daley family. Now, what the heck is that about? The Joyce family made a fortune under Richard M. Daley on concession contracts at O'Hare, at Navy Pier. I mean, and here we have Jerry Joyce, the son and namesake, running against Bill Daley and even challenging his petitions at one point. I mean, what happened there? It's an interesting dynamic. I remember the first major floor fight of Rahm Emanuel's administration was to strip Joyce's contingent of that concession contract that made them so wealthy, and maybe the Joyces felt the Dailies didn't go to bat for them. But boy, that's a fascinating story. I'd like to be.
What's the old expression about the Irish politicians? He's got the Irish Alzheimer's. He's forgotten everything except his enemies.
This next one is from Carlos Ponce. Hope I'm saying that right. Like the host of Chicago Tonight. Thank you. Excuse me? Oh, the original Ponce. a couple of questions. What is the governor's action in the mayoral primary, and will the new mayor have a friend in Governor J.B. Pritzker?
Well, I mean, compared to Rauner, absolutely. That was the thing that shocked me the most about Rahm Emanuel and Rauner's administration. I thought the two of them, fast friends, vacation buddies, sharing expensive bottles of wine, I thought to myself, what deals are they going to cut? Wow. You know, allies on education reform. And lo and behold, they were at loggerheads. And it wasn't phony. That friendship is forget it. So that was a missed opportunity of huge proportions for both men. Anything is an improvement from that. And Pritzker has got an agenda that's going to benefit the city greatly. And so I think you'll see a lot come the city's way.
To get to the question, the specific part about is he going to play in the election, I think the answer is no. He just got elected on a broad-based coalition. There's no reason for J.B. Pritzker to alienate any union, any interest. He has a ton of heavy lifting to do in Springfield. If it comes to a runoff and there's a candidate who, for some reason, doesn't align with J.B. Pritzker's interests, and maybe he quietly puts his thumb on the scale, But I don't really see that scenario playing out.
Yeah, I think I agree with both my colleagues here. Pritzker is going to be a friend, but the question is how much of a friend. If he really wanted to be a friend, he would do something on the pension side to give some relief to the city of Chicago so that local taxpayers don't have to pick up the whole load. But JB is totally aligned with the unions on that. You're not going to see any constitutional That's amendment right. or anything else, which means Chicago's got to pay the bill. Now, Springfield could come to the rescue with more money for Chicago, and some of the candidates, Mr. Vallis especially, really depend big time on more money from Chicago. But we're going to see how much of that is made available to municipalities and to local governments, how much gets sucked up by the state. For instance, when we get this new graduated income tax, our municipalities are going to receive their traditional cut of the pie. Quietly, one of the things the Democrats did to balance the budget in recent years is they reduced the municipal share. The new mayor, I'm sure, would like to go back to the old share, which would mean another $50-100 million a year. But is it going to happen? Don't know yet.
Right.
This one's from Dave Lundy. Aileron, I hope I'm saying your company right. Oh, there you are. Thank you. I can read. In a low turnout, multi-candidate mayoral field, typically the better organization wins. Will it this time?
Well, I said, you know, I think Preckwinkle does have that advantage. There's no question. You've got to get your voters out. There is no real sense of great enthusiasm out there. You know, in the Harold Washington election, you could feel the pulse of it. You could feel it in the streets. You saw the buttons. You knew something was happening. There was a movement. There's no movement here. And so you wonder, what is the turnout going to be, and who can get their voters out? Who has the foot soldiers? Who can knock on the doors? Who can get the early voting? You know, and let's face it, so much of the voting occurs early. So I think it's got to favor Preckwinkle, and it's got to favor Daley, who has money to create foot soldiers.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also, you know, there's the CTU, which they're not putting in much money, but they all live in the city, they all vote, they all talk to their neighbors. SEIU, obviously a good army of foot soldiers. What's really been on the sidelines a lot are the building trades, who Emmanuel relied heavily on. You know, we haven't seen the operating engineers really weigh in much, and so you have to wonder how organized, if at all, they are, if they all just go their own ways and do what they want to do. You know, is there a polar vortex the week of the election? I mean, so many things could literally make a difference here on you know, the turnout and where it goes. But she's got some soldiers, but I don't know how great the enthusiasm level is. I haven't seen any Chuy Garcia level of even enthusiasm yet for Preckwinkle. So
no, I think that's a good point. Certainly, the leadership of the big unions of SEIU and CTU have thrown in totally with Preckwinkle. Whether that still carries out down to the troop level, I'm not so sure. We're going to find out. My suspicion is that a lot of unionists, particularly in the building trades, are doing what much of the building business community is doing. They're kind of playing footsie a little bit with Daley, but they really want to see who makes the runoff before they put down their chits.
Yeah, the big money is holding back. What is business like most of all? Predictability. What don't they have? Predictability. They don't know what the heck is going to happen. So they're holding back their big money. When the runoff comes, that's when you'll see it.
Okay, so I'm combining my question with this next question. Bill Bergman, Truth in Accounting, asks, can or should the ongoing federal investigation impact the race for mayor and other electoral choices facing that? And a couple of you have said things that have made me think about this. Early voting has already started. And if there is more to be learned about some of these candidates and their relationships with said federal investigation, should we maybe hold off on voting until actual election day? Like, what if I cast a vote now and then I'm like, oh, I find out the candidate I just voted for was a bit more involved than I thought?
Well, I think that's probably why you saw the feds rush with the one charge against Ed Burke, the attempted extortion charge. They felt it necessary to get it out there before the election, which was extraordinary, for them to raid those offices so publicly on November 29th and then to charge him quickly with only one count when we know that Danny Solis recorded at least a dozen phone calls, conversations with Burke and movers and shakers over a period of 2 years, then that tells you something about what the government thought about this. But will there be other charges before the election? I would say no. I would say no.
For whatever it's worth, this is strictly anecdotal. I haven't checked with the Board of Elections. One of the people in my office went and voted, I think, the second day of early voting, and said there were like 3 voters there and 5 times as many clerks and Board of Elections personnel. That may indicate that the people of Chicago have independently decided that you have good advice and let's wait and see.
Yeah, you vote early when you have your mind made up. And we have a lot of people who live in the city who have not made any.
Or they're not going to vote at all. They're so disgusted.
Especially when you have so many choices. Bill Truvdallo. I'm sorry. Thank you. Out of the second tier candidates, who do you think is actually best qualified to run the city, also considering the CTU contract and pension ramp up?
Well, I think Gary Chico is a guy who's like, when he says ready on day one, I think he really is. He's done so many different jobs in so many different governmental entities, city colleges, park district, school board, city hall, chief of staff. He knows the government. It's almost like he spews out 1,000 ideas in 5 minutes because he's been waiting to do this for so long. So I think he could take over on day one. I think Lori Lightfoot has experience at OPS, at OEMC, at the U.S. Attorney's Office, at the Police Board. She is another person. Paul Vallis, obviously, because he's been in several different cities and run the schools, although he's not run anything but schools. That would be my guess.
A couple words about Chico. If you remember, he ran for the United States Senate back when a state senator named Barack Obama was running for the United States Senate. And Obama is said to have said at the time that the one guy he was most worried about was Chico because he was the best on the stump, and he is. He comes across. He was great last night at our forum. He comes across very well. He's got his lines down cold. He's got a nice personal story. The problem with Gary, though, is if he ever gets any real traction, he's so vulnerable, particularly to someone with big media tech. I mean, Gary's living is he's a lobbyist. He's traded on his favors and getting stuff done for people at City Hall for 25 years. And you don't think that's going to come out in an ad and be hung right around him with a little Burke tag? You bet it will.
Well, the problem is, though, nobody has any money, and what money they do have is being spent introducing themselves to the voters. You could do a devastating spot on probably any one of these candidates, but if you do that, then you're playing whack-a-mole. You're going to hit this guy, and the other guy
pops
up.
Yeah, it's not going to happen now, but it might if he makes a runoff.
In the runoff, yes.
Sorry, I'm going through all my questions. I have so many. Here's a good one. Dwayne Deskins, prosecutor. Hope I'm saying your name right. Do you think the federal corruption wiretap disclosure in the Sun-Times just before the February primary election was an accident?
I don't know.
Fran?
Chris?
Chris is waving.
No,
I'm just going to leave that one on the floor.
I don't know what you mean by that. I really don't know what you mean by that.
Well,
Let me take a crack at it.
Okay.
You wrote about it, yeah.
What we know, I think what we know, because people sometimes have not talked about how they happened to get the affidavit, and I understand it. I would probably do the same thing if I had been lucky enough to have it. What we know is that the FBI wanted a search warrant for Alderman Solis's office, so they filed an affidavit. That got filed in federal court, as all affidavits, all things of that nature do, and it was filed on PACER, which is the court's internal server system for documents, and it was supposed to have been sealed. Well, it turned out not to have been sealed, and the Sun-Times managed to get a copy. Whether that's because of good reporting or whether they has a tip to look or a little bit of both, I don't know, but they got it. And so That much we know, but the bigger question of I think really hasn't been answered yet is why after all these many years Eddie Burke has been acting like this forever. I mean, anybody who covers City Hall knows that Burke is famous for sidling up to people who have business before the Finance Committee and dropping his card and say, "Hey, I'm in the property tax business." Wink, wink. And so the question is,
why, after all these many decades, did the feds finally decide to go after him now? All I know, Fran may know more, Bill may know more, this wiretap appears to be part of a much broader Hydra kind of thing that's been going on for years with all kinds of tentacles. Exactly what it got going, I don't know, but it may be pure happenstance that some of this is coming out now.
I think in all the years that the federal government has been pursuing public corruption, they always knew and always had their sights on two men who ran it all, and that was Burke and Madigan. And so it's not that surprising in a way that this came out. The fact is, why now? I think someday we'll learn that. But to know that the people who pull the strings, that's how you change government. That's how you change it. You change it by changing the power structure. That means changing the people at the very top who pull the strings. And that was always Burke and Madigan.
I mean, the one thing we can say is this investigation has been going on for quite some time. When you look at Solis and when he started wiring up,
yep.
You know, so... you know, it reached critical mass with Burke, who made a comment while on the phone that was, you know, pretty smoking gun, and the feds decided to get in and do something about it before the election. The rest of the fallout is, you know, anybody's game and guess, but I don't think the Solis piece of it registers as much. You know, Mendoza's been tied to Solis and companies associated with Solis and his sister. That's like a step or two removed. The relationship between Burke and Preckwinkle is so direct with the fundraiser that he threw for her at his home, that I think that's why we've seen that one resonate the most, and did again last night at the debate. So
since this is a mayoral predictions panel, or that's what I was told, who's the next mayor of Chicago? You heard it here first, folks.
We're out of time, right?
Fresh out of time.
One of 14 people.
Are you sure?
No.
No one's making the call. We'll make calls on the runoff. Who do you think's making it to the runoff?
I've already said I thought Preck, Winkle, yes. And Daly at the moment, if I had to choose.
As a beat reporter, and we hear so much about fake news and ethics, it's not my job to be a prognosticator. I cover the candidates, I cover the race, and I'm not going to make a prediction, but I'm sure we'll find out soon enough.
Not taking the bait. Thanks, guys. Would you join me in thanking our panelists?